This program was first broadcast on Arrow FM, Wairarapa's only community access media station, and shared on Access Media with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Kia ora, welcome to What's Up Down South. I am Marina Lira. In today's program, it will be a little bit different because we are going to listen to the discussion from Jane O and Richard Cutt from South Wairarapa Vets. I hope you all enjoy.
Kia ora, welcome to this discussion with Jane O and Richard Curtin from South Wairarapa Veterinary Services, who are here to talk about the role of veterinary surgeons and the very pressing issue of climate change. Why do you think vets have a moral duty or responsibility to speak out about climate change and its likely impacts on animal health and the environment?
Well, thanks, Melissa. Nice to be here, and pretty cool to be able to talk through some of this stuff with you. Yeah, it's a good question, and I think we do have a moral duty, but we, you know, first and foremost, we have a moral duty as human beings. And for me, it's as a father and also a bit as a business owner to do more. We do have a role in animal welfare, but that's not all that defines us. So yes, we do as vets have a moral obligation. I think what makes it important, and Jane and I have talked a little bit about this as vets, to be involved and driving this forward and showing some leadership, is I think as a veterinary professional, we do have a high trust rating with our clients and the community, and we are science-based, and we're very solution-focused. So I think it's a good fit for us. But for me, it feels like more a human obligation to do this, as everyone should be doing.
Jane, can you add a bit to that about what it is about being a vet that might add an extra component to this?
Yes, I see us as the interface between science and the community. And the scientists, the climate scientists, have been struggling for nearly 50 years now to get the message across, to be taken seriously. Some of them are so desperate they're chaining themselves to banks. We have the opportunity on a daily basis to talk on a one-to-one basis in consultations with our customers. And climate change is affecting just about everything. And so there's always something that you can bring up in a conversation. What you're feeding your dog could be a higher vegetable-based diet, lower meat, all sorts of aspects that you can bring up which relate to the climate crisis, trying to raise awareness for those that aren't aware, trying to give people that are and are already worried about it things that they can do that are going to be useful. I think we've got a huge role to play here. Yes.
What are vets and vet associations doing about this issue worldwide?
The World Veterinary Association declared a climate emergency in 2020, around the same time as the New Zealand government. The Australian Veterinary Association has been very active in this area and has a very strong climate policy. The British Association has also been active, as has the American. There's 21 veterinary associations that have declared, have climate policies. We are not one of them.
So what is New Zealand Veterinary Association doing about this, and what was their reaction to the World Veterinary Association policy?
A deathly silence.
Richard, why do you think that is?
I suppose maybe no ideas of how to progress that forward. There certainly hasn't been much, and even this year, you know, with Jane and I knocking on their door a little bit, there's a little bit of dialogue, you know. But we're not seeing anything tangible. We're not really seeing any leadership in this space.
Many countries have endorsed the World Veterinary Association position on climate change. Why haven't the New Zealand Veterinary Association?
I can't answer that. I've been asking them for leadership, or at least discussion about some climate leadership, for quite a few years now. And the only response of any use that I've had was that they're a member-based, member-driven association, and they need to hear from their members that this is an important topic.
Do you think that's what's happened in Australia? I mean, they're our nearest neighbours. Why do you think they have been so much more proactive?
Because they have directly felt the massive effect of climate change with those terrible fires in 2019, 2020. Massive millions of wild animals dying, excruciating deaths, massive loss of habitat, and then now the flooding, of course. So it's a typical human response to not do anything until you're actually faced with the emergency. So I guess, you know, that's part of it. But they have really geared up. There's a voluntary organisation called Vets for Climate Action Australia who have 1,700 members, and they've really motivated the veterinary profession. They've gathered together many luminaries of the veterinary profession, many chief veterinary officers retired. They've petitioned the government. They had multiple times for more effort on climate action. They played a very active role in getting out and talking to people about who they're going to vote for in this last very recent election, and can claim some credit for getting a leader who's much more concerned about climate change. They had a big part in pushing the Australian Veterinary Association towards a much stronger climate policy. So yeah, it's a collective effort by concerned people, and right. I think that's the key, that you need to get together with similar concerned people to get any action.
Yeah. So Richard, what is the level of awareness here amongst vets in New Zealand? Have you noticed an increase?
In our space immediately where we work at South Warrapa Vets, through the efforts of Jane and a little bit more laterally through myself, there's some good momentum. Beyond that, I don't feel like there's a lot of awareness. And I just want to go back to something Jane said on the AVA. Jane will know more about this, but their target is net zero by 2030 yep. for the AVA, which is a pretty fantastic statement to come out with. Yep. And they've got some pretty strong words through that policy, whereas we just right across the ditch with pretty high carbon emissions per capita are doing nothing. And when we talked, the other thing we probably just need to bring up is when we did talk to the NZVA, particularly around this up-and-coming conference, we were told that it was climate change was in the strategic plan. So that strategic plan is a list of priorities that they want to work on through this year. It sits fifth equal on that priority list as part of a One Health initiative, so an all-encapsulating One Health initiative. Of which welfare and everything is a part of, so it doesn't sit there on its own as a priority. So we're not a part of those strategies there, and I suppose we're really focusing on what we're doing within our clinic and our space, and then hoping that can in some way impart some action within the veterinary profession, But to answer your immediate question, you know, I was away at a class reunion with a whole lot of vets, and while we were socialising and doing that, it certainly wasn't a relevant topic.
Right. So how in Australia, they've obviously had this very direct evidence of a changing climate and the very increased risks that Australia is facing and going through. Are you seeing anything in New Zealand that makes you realise that climate change is already happening here? I mean, are there more animal health issues, change of parasites that are more prevalent in a warming world or anything like that?
Whew, where to start? There's certainly been some major weather events that have caused a lot of deaths. A huge number of dairy cows were washed out down the Buller River. July last year, washed up on the Westport beaches, which was a huge cost to farmers because, of course, they were heavily pregnant, and each unit lying on that beach is a big capital cost to the farm. Infrastructure losses, the massive floods in Canterbury, washing out bridges, breaking, you know, large areas of farms covered in shingle, infrastructure breakdown, supply chain issues. As far as disease spread, the spread of vectors, there's a big worry about a warmer, wetter world, which we're certainly experiencing in the Wairarapa, making it a nicer place for disease vectors like some of the mosquitoes that will transmit things like heartworm. Heartworm has certainly spread south in Australia. This is another thing we need. We can't just sit on our hands. We need to be preparing for these inevitable changes. So,
yeah, and I imagine the floods in terms of in Canterbury or and here in the Wairarapa, in terms of grain. I mean, we lost an awful lot of grain in New Zealand, grain production, because of those floods in February, right on harvest time. So that's going to mean that feed is going to be more expensive, isn't it? So that's going to create its own issues in terms of animal welfare.
And, it, you know, climate change obviously affects the globe. So we're going to see a lot more droughts. We're already seeing problems with food shortages. India, you know, 50 degrees heat. They cannot get their plants, their wheat crop growing because it's just they're just burning in the field. Famine brings social upheaval and war. You know, we need to take this seriously. And we're running out of time. So, The other thing that I wanted to mention was that the farming sector so far are not included in the ETS, and they've come up with a proposition for the government where they each farm measures their own carbon and pays accordingly. One of the big issues there is New Zealand is, you know, a long way from any market, so there's a big carbon footprint getting our product over to overseas customers. Our biggest overseas some of our biggest overseas customers, like Mars and McDonald's, have a much higher target for emissions reduction than we are currently setting in New Zealand. So our farming sector could well lose out on sales if they don't get their act together and take this seriously.
Right. So what barriers are there for vets and vet associations in New Zealand to stop them from being more outspoken about climate change? What do you think's preventing us being more outspoken?
Yeah, what barriers? Jane and I have talked a little bit about it. It feels like just even doing this, you know, work within our own business and then trying to tell others or involve others in what we're doing. And we're not saying we're leaders here, but we're just trying to do our bit. That it sort of feels like with any dialogue we've had that we're sort of having to push through doors rather than having doors opened. And I can't quite figure that out. I think firstly it probably starts with acceptance within the industry and the NZVA that there is a very real climate emergency here. And I'm not quite sure why they haven't accepted that and led with that. And then I think the other issue maybe in the veterinary industry and is that there is a lot of challenges currently, and it's not an excuse, but around some wellness stuff and mental health stuff and vet shortages. And I just wonder if that is, when you look through the strategic sort of objectives coming up, there's a lot of the wellness stuff in there, which is rightly so very important. Like I'm not discounting that at all. So we'll get an opportunity to ask that at conference and we'll meet with, you know, the CEO there. Mm. And so we'll have an opportunity to ask that. The messaging I'm getting and Jane's getting via email is they want members to drive this, right? So they want vets who are out there who are paying their subscriptions to say, we want climate change. But I just found an excerpt out of the 2021 annual report, and I don't know if you've seen this, Jane, but the NZVA talk about relevance, and then they've got a paragraph here which to me suggests they should be doing more, and I just want to read this. In terms of their relevance, we exist for our members. Everything we do is to support, educate, connect, advocate, and guide them. Our organisation will both adapt to changes in the world and create them ourselves. We will make sure that members' voices are heard and that we work with them to be a truly representative body.
Mm.
So when I read that statement, I think, well, are they really holding true to that statement of their relevance?
Mm.
So it could be a number of things. It could be there's lots of other stuff going on, and unfortunately we deal with what's right in our, you know, we just naturally fight the fire, and I think vets, we do this on a daily basis. You fight that fire right in front of you. So it might be that, it might be that they don't know how to start. But I think Australia's set a really good example of how to start. We only need to peer over the ditch to see that. Or it might be they feel their members aren't being loud enough on it. I'm not sure. We'll ask.
It's hard to know. Mm. The Veterinary Council also has on the website that they're constantly scanning the horizon for upcoming challenges. Well, I feel they must have their eyes shut, because there's no mention of climate change. If you search their website, I've also written numerous letters to them too. Yeah. But, yeah, one thing I'd like to pick up on what you're saying is mental health issues.
Mm.
Well, eco-anxiety, climate change anxiety is a huge and growing issue. And if NZVA is worried about the mental health of their staff, they really need to help us on this one.
Welcome back. We just heard the music Life's the Beach from Tahini Bikini. I hope you all enjoyed. And now we are back with Jane and Richard for more discussion.
Your main customers, you know, or Vet's main customers, probably in most countries, here is the farming community. And do you feel like they are addressing this? Is that a barrier for Vets? Is it a conflict of interest?
Yeah, I wonder about that. And behind the scenes, traditionally, I mean, every issue seems political in its real depths, you know. And so I do wonder. Traditionally, Vets have made money off farmers, and increasing production lifts profits for Vets. So I do wonder if there is some of that sort of stuff in there, you know. It's hard to unwrap that because, and I've just been trying to upskill myself a little bit on the farming situation, and they've got some real challenges ahead, you know, with their emissions and dealing with that. And I tend to come back to the thing of, well, as Vets, yes, we have obligations to inform and to help, and so when we're asked, we can help. But I still see, for me personally, our focus is immediately on what we're doing. We can control what we're doing, really focus on that and try and lead the way in that area. And then the farming situation, I mean, there's more and more coming out about that, and they're getting more and more engaged in that, I'm hearing. So, yeah, they've got a lot of work to do as well as landowners and business owners there, you know. We've all got our part to play. This doesn't just stop at farmers. This stop, you know, everyone who lives on this earth has to do their bit, you know, at home and I think in the business that they're in. And like, I'm pretty disappointed with some of the very big businesses, corporate businesses, who are pulling huge numbers in terms of profitability, and where's their actions, you know? And we're just a very small business in the Wairarapa, and it just so happens that we've got motivational and inspirational people like Jane who work in our business, and we've got shareholders who are motivated around the climate change aspect as well. Mm. So I think everyone has that obligation to do more.
I think people are going to be pushed to do more too, because there's some very strong tie-ups between, for example, cattle. This is hugely relevant. As temperatures rise, cattle become more heat-stressed, which is a welfare issue, and also a production issue, because the more stressed they are, the lower their productivity. And when you consider that cattle get heat-stressed from 20 degrees centigrade up, doesn't take much in New Zealand to have a heat-stressed cow. So this is, you know, these are areas where I think Vets could really start talking, using their position. And I really think that the dairy and meat industry should have something like the poultry industry, where you can pay a little extra for eggs from happy hens that are certified by the SPCA, independent body, to be free range. I really think there should be a happy cow certification, which is independently certified. People are happy to pay a little more to know that cow has had a tree to stand under on a hot day, hasn't had to walk 3 kilometres to the shed twice a day, maybe even had the calf left on it for a bit longer and done a bit of shared milking.
One of the more modern farming practices has been these enormous pivot irrigators, and therefore taking out of any kind of shelter belts. I was pretty shocked when driving in the South Island, and just the, you know, kilometre after kilometre of absolutely no shelter but these pivot irrigators. And so no shelter in the winter and no shade in the summer. Is that something that Vets have a role to play in terms of talking to farmers about that as an animal welfare issue?
It's a good question. I agree with you. I drive, you know, when I graduated from uni, I started at Oamaru down in the South Island. You only have to drive around there and look at it, and it's distressing to see and how close they are to the river, you know, as well, and the use of that land. Yes, absolutely, I think so. If you look at the Animal Welfare Act, there's provision for shelter. And there's also MPI police, that Animal Welfare Act. And there's also bodies like Dairy NZ who are pumping out information for these farmers. I'm not sure how well it's policed. I would like to think that vets, if they see these problems, would be discussing it with their clients. Again, it's a difficult conversation. If that relationship is a long-standing relationship and there's finance behind it. So I'd like to think that we are part of that, but we're not all of that. That Animal Welfare Act as well is needs to be in place and make sure it's relevant, you know, in terms of SHADE.
And policed.
Yeah, and policed, yeah, 100%. And the farmer lobby and the farmer groups as well need to be helping farmers work appropriately to deal with emissions on that side and help advise around SHADE. I do struggle with the real production-driven nature of, you know, I was a dairy vet up until probably, I don't know, five years ago maybe. There's some farmers that do it really well, don't get me wrong, but there's some that are really just focused on the right now without much thought about how that impacts the future. You know, it's maybe the focus on the dollar value right now for that milk.
Mm. That's where I think the carrot of getting a premium for your product, if you've certified to have a nice environment for your cows, I think that could really help.
Those sort of ideas are great, and I don't know a lot about that stuff, so I'm not going to pretend I do. But I have friends who are farmers who are really motivated in this space and doing great things. And so, from a climate perspective and from a welfare perspective, they're doing really good stuff. So there is some really good stuff, but the whole profession, you know, the whole profession and industry needs to do a lot more.
Yeah, that's it. Those are the people that are doing it off their own bat, because they see that it's the right thing to do. But, you know, many of us actually need a carrot or a stick to bring us up to line in some of these areas.
And also to hear about those stories. So actually to hear from farmers who have prioritised SHADE and shelter or have chosen to reduce dairy numbers or whatever is appropriate to their environment and to the changes. When you hear of those stories, then they can be imitated. That's a leadership for other farmers. Whereas the sort of encouragement has been for the white gold and to produce more and more milk, so that we have that situation that you have dairy farms in the Mackenzie country with searing heat in the summer and freezing cold in the winter and no shelter. And I think of that footage, if that is seen, and when you know what a dairy cow, the sort of temperature range that a dairy cow should be in, I think that people would see it differently.
Yeah, I've scanned cows down there. I've been down near Twizel scanning dairy cows, wondering what the hell's going on here. Mm. Open dairy sheds in the middle of that country, and I don't know, they're past decisions that are made in the past, and for whatever reason, I don't know. But I think you're absolutely right. There are some farmers doing amazing stuff in terms of fencing off well vegetated areas. There is amazing stuff. But again, I keep coming back to that. That's a start. You're right. They can lead, as Jane and I are trying to lead a little bit in our business through the actions of what we're going to try and do as well, using forums like this.
So tell me more about what South Wairarapa Vet Services have been doing. You know, what are the sorts of things that individual vets and vet practices can do?
First up, measure your carbon footprint so you know what you're dealing with.
So explain about that a little bit more.
So you need to take a financial year and you need to hook up with an outfit that is good at measuring carbon footprints and you will charge you a small fee like ECOS, E-K-O-S. Or you can do it yourself. There's a free calculator you can download through the government. I think it's via the MPI website, but that requires a lot more inputting and a real facility with spreadsheets. But there's many different ways you can do it, depending on how much money you're prepared to spend for someone else to do the work. But once you've got that data, once you've input that data and calculated your carbon emissions for that year, then you can see where the bulk of your emissions are coming from. And that gives you a real direction as to where the best places to put your energy into reducing emissions are. Or you can say, okay, well, we emitted 350 tons of CO2 equivalents in that financial year, so we will buy carbon credits to offset. Happily, our board decided that they didn't want to do that. They actually wanted to try and reduce the emissions within the company, which I think is a much better way to go. Because basically that's what we all need to be doing, is reducing our emissions.
Yes, so, because carbon offsetting, what are the limitations around that?
You can pay to offset overseas. You can pay to offset with people who are carbon farming in New Zealand. The limitations are that unless it's right in your district, you're just relying on someone else monitoring what's going on.
Is it a long-term solution?
It's not a long-term solution, because the whole problem is that our CO2 emissions are still climbing. So we really need to reduce our emissions in the first instance.
So when you did this analysis, what did you find? What did you find was your major carbon footprint?
91% of our carbon footprint is due to vehicle transport. So I think it was 45% was our fleet of ambulatory vets. About 30% was staff getting to and from work, and the rest was the calculation, the amount of fuel we use overall, the emissions associated with getting that stuff out of the oil well and transporting it to New Zealand, getting it to the pump. So, yeah, vast majority is just to do with transport.
And do you think
fossil fuel transport.
And that would be probably likely, I suppose, city vets maybe a little bit smaller.
City vets would be quite different, I would imagine.
But pretty much every rural practice in New Zealand would probably discover a similar type thing.
I would say so.
Yeah.
So is it important to be looking at EVs? Is that something?
Yeah, well, that's the big thing I think we still need to tackle. We met for the first time. It's been quite an interesting journey, actually, and it sort of rewinds even back before we did our carbon footprint, and the fact that every time I'd come to work and do surgery, Jane would be banging on my surgery door going, we need to do more for climate change. And we'd do surgeries together, and we'd be spending a lot of time, and so the momentum developed. And then because I just want to talk about this briefly, because yep. I acknowledge Jane's input in this. And then Jane put a proposal to the board of mainly shareholders on the board to measure the carbon footprint. And everyone voted unanimously to do that, which was a massive win and something that, you know, you've got to acknowledge Jane and her enthusiasm, you know, motivation to do this, which was a really big win for us. You know, you see that money figure and you go, okay, what's this going to get us? This is not going to fix the problem. This is just going to tell us how bad it is. But the group of shareholders are a pretty good group and I think pretty motivated, so agreed. And then what stemmed out of that was a financial figure, which when you put a dollar on it, generates so much discussion. Mm. And I think the reason I also wanted to bring this up is because when the options were discussed as international offsetting versus more exotic national, you know, so pine offsetting versus, so we had the prices for each of those. Yep. And that was, again, more vigorous discussion as well, really opened that discussion up, and we were unanimously in favour of had to be New Zealand based, had to be natives if we were gonna do it. And then one of the shareholders really wanted it to be, if we were going to offset, it had to be close to the business so that our staff could be involved and actually see what we're doing. Otherwise, it's just a financial figure that's coming out of the budget every year and you don't actually impart anything onto the staff. And then the right decision was made. I really wanted to offset. And then the wisdom amongst us sort of started talking a little bit more, and it was decided that if we invested internally on some really cool strategies, then that would rub off on staff, and then it'd rub off on clients as well. So our reach could be quite large. So it was quite a cool process to be involved with, and we learnt a lot out of that process. Now we're at the difficult stage going, well, we know how bad it looks. How do we fix it? And we've just formed a group, so we call them the Climate Crisis Action Group. So it's a group of five of us within the business, and Jane can attest to this, but we've been through some rough months lately when you hear the news, and I'd come to work in a good mood, and then Jane would arrive, because I don't read the newspapers, and Jane would arrive and tell me the latest news, and I'd be in a bad mood, and then we'd get frustrated with the lack of open doors, and then we'd get a small win, and then we'd suddenly feel a little bit better. And you talk about eco-anxiety. I think that's exactly right. And if people out there read something about eco-anxiety, it's very normal. We should all be anxious about it. So to say someone's crazy for having eco-anxiety is a very abnormal statement. So we would have these up and down days, and then Jane put her foot down because we were going to pull out a conference because it was just getting too hard and we were getting too stressed. And Jane,
we weren't getting enough positive feedback.
Yeah.
We just felt like we'd be going there, you know, knocking our heads against a brick wall again.
Our last seminar on the last day when everyone was already driving their diesel trucks home probably. So so Jane put her foot down and said, no, bugger it, we're doing this because we've got to take every opportunity we can. And we started to feel a bit better. And then we found there was another group who was environmentally minded called Sustainavets, and Jane's aligned. We'll talk to them a little bit, and so we're quite excited about meeting up with them.
That was an interesting little side story. When we were feeling really down about it all, like, oh, this just, it's, what's the point in going there? We just seem to be yelling into the wind. One of our colleagues wrote an email to the conference organisers saying, do you realise what a bad look this is for the NZVA to put something as important as climate change on the last day? Blah, 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 blah. And she got a reply that we hadn't, that there was this group called Sustainavet going to be there and had been given a free stand. So thanks to her email, that I then got back in touch again with the organisers and said, hey, great to hear that Sustainavet, and can we have their contact? And then it all sort of got going again. And the point is that once you realise that there are other people who care and you can connect with them and you start to feel there's a group rather than it's just two peas rattling around in an empty
winding each other up.
Yeah, winding each other
up. Poking each other with sticks. And you should be worried about this.
Are you as worried as I am? Yeah. So
so what I was going to go on to say is, so then after that, one part of, so we have a draft plan for what we'd like to do, setting some targets and initiatives. It hasn't really been ratified at this point, but it's sort of what we're working towards. And one of that was to set up this Climate Crisis Action Group, who met for the first time last week. So there's five of us in this group, and so it's our job to get these initiatives in play, capture other ideas, I suppose hold the business to account a little bit. And so that group, just having that extra energy, has really got us enthusiastic about this. And each little win makes you feel better and better about it. But it's very interesting to hear members of the group that are coming in all have their, talk about their concerns about climate change and their lack of knowing what to do. So this provides an avenue for them as well, which spills on to happier team members, retention of staff in an area where we are struggling to get vets. And
it appears attraction of staff.
Yeah, attraction of staff.
Remember our conversation yesterday?
Yeah, we've got a new graduate who's applied for a position who's very excited to see what we as a veterinary business are doing. So there's some huge spin-off effects. It's taken Jane a lot longer to get us to this point, but I feel like it's taken a long time, and I've only been involved actively for a couple of years, really.
Yeah.
So it must have really increased the awareness throughout your whole veterinary practice. It's got to have, over the years, which you will have seen, Jane, particularly, because you started the knocking on the door many years ago. And do you see a real change in the business and the attitudes amongst the staff?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's now... It's no longer me, the mad woman in the corner, saying, we've got to recycle our plastic. You know, you hear other staff members saying, oh, we could do that, and that would mean that we don't use so much of that. And it's a growing sense of we're all working together to make this better, and it's become a really positive thing. And one of the big initiatives that the board got in place, and we have carried this out, the first one, was an annual tree planting day, which was a huge success. Unfortunately, Richard had COVID, so couldn't be there. But it was the most glorious day. We had very, very strong support from a couple of our major suppliers. 16 of them turned up to plant.
So these are businesses?
Businesses that supply us with goods. And they were seriously keen on planting. They weren't just coming for a pizza. They also paid for all the trees. South Wairarapa Vets, incredibly generous, they paid the wages of staff, their normal wages, to come and plant trees. We had this wonderful afternoon of everyone feeling really happy and engaged and having a laugh, and then we had pizzas, and everyone was saying, please, let's do this again. This feels so good. This is, you know, we're doing something. We're doing something useful.
And so these were native trees?
Native trees in a protected QE2 covenant.
So how many trees did you plant that day?
We planted 620, which by a very back of the envelope sort of calculation offsets about 10% of our annual carbon emissions, or will offset once they grow for 100 years.
So was there a surprise when you did the carbon calculation that it was 91% transport?
Richard could probably answer that better.
Yeah. Well, I had very little knowledge of what that even looked like before going into this. I just thought it sounded great and really was keen on sort of moving to carbon zero as quickly as we could. So for me, when I sat down and looked at that graph, which it's a little pie chart that's sort of become a bit of the touchstone, and as Jane has decided, is it sort of our logo for our group at work. When I looked at that, and I was like, what's that? Oh, that's travel. So it sort of was surprising. Because travel, so we included in, which I think is really good in the carbon footprint, is we included all our staff transport to and from work. So we've accounted for all our staff, which is a lot, 60 staff to and from work, and some of them travel quite a way. So was I surprised? Yes. Initially, I was like, man, that's going to be hard to fix. But I've got more optimism about that the more I learn and the more people I talk to. We picked up the phone recently and talked to Greg Lang, who's the Carterton mayor, just trying to find out where the cycleways between the towns was at, because we've got four centres in Masterton, Carterton, Martinborough and Featherston. So we're moving staff around all the time, and sometimes a vet might have to go down to Featherston and work. And I think there's an opportunity in the Wairarapa to link those towns in a really safe way. I wouldn't like any of our staff on that main road. I've run along that main road, and it does not fill me with comfort. I think we've got to do way more. And so every little area you look into transport and hearing a little bit about some of the initiatives that they're trialling in Wellington with more small sort of dedicated bus services that aren't doing big routes. Obviously the advent of e-bikes, obviously smart cars and just EVs and just hearing more about the growth in that area, you start to feel a little bit better and a little bit better. Mm. So the big challenge we've got is the large animal vets trucks on the road and how we get an appropriate solution for that. With the staff transport, I think we can slowly and surely help with that. We've got a couple of the fleet vehicles that are management vehicles as well that could easily be EVs. So, yeah, back to your original question, the transport side of it was surprising and initially very daunting.
Do you know of any veterinary surgeries that have put in like solar on their roofs that have then helped to actually provide power for EVs? Is that something that's been done in Australia at all, or do you know
of
any?
In Australia, yes. Yeah.
I don't know any in New Zealand.
No.
But I'm so busy I don't really focus on cats and dogs. I don't really talk to many vets in other clinics. We don't get around. We'll certainly find out more about that at conference, I think. I think we'll be quite attractive and find out a lot more at conference.
Yeah.
So what's the plan of action? What are the next steps?
Conference. That's our big focus at the moment. Is it next week?
Yeah.
No, week after. Well, yeah. 22nd, anyway. The main focus there is to try and get the message out to our colleagues that we need to get moving on this and to try and convince the NZVA that we want them to declare a climate emergency and start leading on this. We're taking some petitions along. We've already got quite a few signatures. We've got our 15-minute presentation. We've got 2 days sharing the stand in the exhibition hall with Sustainavet. We've got a professional video of the tree planting day using drone footage and all sorts, and lots of interviews with people about how they felt about doing the tree planting and climate change and so on. We just really want to engage with people and expand our group of people who agree that we need to do something and are coming up with ideas of what to do and helping each other. Yeah.
And have you created any links with the Australian Vets for Climate Action?
Yes. They are very keen to share the work that they've been doing with New Zealand. I'm very keen that we share that work because they're well advanced with programs that can be used within veterinary clinics to upskill on how to be more efficient, use less energy, use less waste, create less waste and so on. The NZVA chief execs have met with them and discussed, but they haven't quite got there yet as far as how it's going to work in New Zealand. So that is something that I'm hoping we can really encourage NZVA members to encourage our leaders to move on. Yeah.
Yeah, we had a little discussion on this last night, didn't we, about what if the NZVA, like if they said, what do you want us to do?
Yeah.
What would that be immediately? We wondered about the idea of a special group of New Zealand vets creating their own special branch that could advise or set the pace, I suppose.
Yep.
It seems to be, I think Jane's going to find a little bit more about the setup of the Australian group. It seems to be similar to what they did. The NZVA also, it looks like, from a couple of emails, I can't talk too much to this, but it seems like they want their own New Zealand spin on what the Australians have done. So So I don't know, Jane, if I asked you what if we went to the conference and the NZVA said, right, yep, what do we do now? What would you say to them?
This is our Anzac moment.
Yeah.
We haven't got time to reinvent the wheel. Here's our Australian colleagues saying, we've done all this work, we're really keen to share it with you. I really think we need to embrace it and modify it for New Zealand conditions and run with it. It will save us so much time. And time is of the essence.
I think that's a great point to end it on. Thanks. very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Great. Thanks, guys.